Hello and good morning, and you're very welcome to Countrywide. Between now and nine, we walk the fields with a tillage farmer, we meet the new agri-food regulator, and we chat to Nathan Carter about Beyoncé's album, Cowboy Carter. But first, for many, many reasons, these are tough, tough times in Irish farming. The weather is heartbreaking and no one seems to know when this rain will ever stop. And now, Storm Kathleen, if you can tell us how you're getting on weather-wise this morning, do text us 51551 or email countrywide at rte.ie. And yes, the past few years have been challenging, even on dairy farms. Mervyn and Dorothy Fairbrother farm in West Wicklow, and over the past 30 years, they've built a very fine herd of dairy cows. But the enterprise isn't adding up for them. Despite all their effort and hard graft, they're not making the kind of living they need. Now, with their family reared, they are taking the decision to sell the house, the farm and their beloved herd. I met them in Carnew Mart on Wednesday morning.
So we're here now about 11 o'clock and the customers, prospective buyers are all here having a nose around,
yeah.
And just looking at the catalogues, looking at the stock. I don't know how I'm feeling, to be honest. I'm not feeling sad. Just hoping that they'll go to a nice home, because they're quiet and they're pets and, you know, it's a family thing. Mm.
I see that because two of your children are cleaning down your cows there.
Yeah.
Your husband is just taking a stroll. Is he finding it all emotional?
I'd imagine so. Reality now.
Yeah.
We've talked about this for a long time. And today is the first day of the reality of it, of our new plan. We're not quite sure what our new plan is yet, but this is the start of it. It's just the way farming has gone in the last couple of years. We're not getting a living out of it. We work 7 days a week. And now it's just time to take stock. We're young enough to do it. It's been a huge decision. Probably bigger than I actually realise at the moment.
Right at this moment.
Right at this
Explain
moment.
That.
I'll have nothing to do tomorrow. I'll have no income tomorrow. You know, this is our income. We won't be working to earn our wages tomorrow.
Don't tell me you're regretting it, though.
No. There's no regrets. There is no regrets. No regrets whatsoever. It's the right decision for us now. We've done 30 years of this and we're just wore out.
Tell me a little bit about where you farmed and the land that you farmed on.
We farm in a lovely part of the country in Rathdangan, near the Glen of Imal. We're looking up at Lough na Cuile every day. And it's a lovely part of the country. And we've great neighbours and we all help one another. I took over in 1994 from my dad. He took the early farm retirement scheme. Reverend and I have been working together on it ever since. The kids help out when they're home from college or home from school, when they were going to school. And my mother and father helped out when they were able to. Yeah, it was a good life. It was a great life.
The farm was your parents' farm.
Yeah.
And your own children have forged their own different paths, so it's not for them.
Yeah.
How do you feel, or the wider family feel, about the fact that you're going to sell the farm?
Well, my dad bought it in 1958, and bits and bobs along the line. And he was actually going to sell it in 1991 or two, probably for the same reasons that we're doing it today. But I had said that I had showed an interest in farming. As I say, he took the retirement scheme and then we worked from then until now. So,
did they live in the farm with you then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they lived.
So you would have cared for them through the years?
I was their carer for a number of years.
Okay, so am I getting a sense that this is your time?
Yes.
You know, you've worked on the farm, you've brought up three kids. You cared for your parents as they grew older. This is your time, is it,
yes.
Dorothy? Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Explain
time.
That to me a little
it's
bit.
It's our time. It's time for us to just be able to get out and live life a little bit. there's always something to be done. And the cows always have to be milked.
Yeah.
And we don't always have help. Mervyn hasn't been away the whole of last year, so...
Mervyn is there, it's overwhelming for him. It's hard for you to see that too.
Yeah, yeah. It is. Because this is what we've worked towards. Well, not selling is not what we worked towards, but just having this quality of the stock is what we've worked towards over the last number of years. But we couldn't. For Mervyn, I think it's only actually hitting him now, the reality of the whole thing. Like, I'm great at crying, so I'll have a cry in the milking parlour where nobody sees me. Or I'll have a cry in the car. Or I'm talking to somebody and I'll have a cry. But men don't let it out. And he doesn't say an awful lot anyway, at the best of times. So he wouldn't express the way he's feeling about it.
Did you feel if we don't do it now, in our 50s, we'll never do it?
Yes.
I mean, you've grown up on a farm, you've chosen to farm. It's in your DNA. How difficult is it going to be?
I've no idea yet. I'm under no illusion that it's not going to be difficult. I think we're just both so tired at the moment that we're nearly at burnout. Brendan, the day we decided to do this, I gained about 2 inches. Because the whole thing was just wearing me down, absolutely wearing me down. And I would say that last September, August, September time, I said I was a crier. I did a lot of crying because it was just all getting too much, really getting too much. I would say in January and February, or half of February anyway, I checked out for a while because I just couldn't handle it. But once we had made that decision that we were going to sell and change career paths, whatever that may be, I've been a much happier person. And the children, they've all worked hard. They would be interested to a point, but it's not sustainable for them. You know, we can't all get a living out of it. We've made that choice and we'll do what we can for them to prosper.
Dorothy, just looking at your fine herd here, a lot of time and care. What are you going to miss, do you think?
What I'll actually miss, Brenda, as I said, the cows are quiet. So you're walking down the yard and you meet a cow and she's there and she'll let you scratch her and rub her head and that sort of thing. That's what I'm going to miss. Yeah. They're pets.
Okay, so we're 11:30. In an hour's time, the mart will be on.
Yeah.
On a countdown.
Yes.
That's all. Thank you very much for the first 50 minutes.
We had the full clearance sale of the complete herd for Mervyn and Dorothy Fairbrother. They're a long established, mostly AI bred herd, some use of stock bulls, but vast majority AI bred.
The auctioneer today is David Quinn from Carnew Mart. David, how unusual is a sale like this where all the stock is going, all the silage? What are you seeing?
Well, Brenda, I suppose, go back 3 or 4 years ago, it's quite unusual. You might have maybe 2 or 3 every season. But certainly in the last 12 months, we've seen a huge increase in numbers of entire dispersals. And I suppose from September of last year up to now, we probably have handled 10 or 12. So there's a big change around. I think last year was a very difficult farming year with poor weather and poor prices. And I think a lot of people have got to the stage where they decided, they're going to make a change. Maybe in some cases they're renting land. In the case today, the family have decided to go for a complete change of scenery. They're going to sell the farm, which we hope to bring to the market in May, and they'll be moving to fresh pastures. So it is quite unusual, but as I said, it's becoming more common, and probably with the fact that there's less successors on farms, it will become more common as we head into the next number of years.
So, David, who's buying? Where do you think this herd is going to end up?
Well, we had buyers from a number of counties today. The vast majority of buyers would probably be from the southeast, from Wicklow, Wexford, Carlow and Kilkenny. But there were buyers from Meath and there was a couple of Northern Ireland buyers as well. So there will be quite a spread. But I would say probably 75% of the herd will stay in the Wicklow, Wexford, Carlow area, with maybe 25% being dispersed throughout the country. The other side of that, there's not a flood of it, because if there was, the market would be affected. There are still plenty of buyers. The sellers today are on one side of the ring, but the other side of the ring was full of buyers and still plenty of people to buy good quality stock.
Okay, we'll work hard, make sure and get them a load of money.
That's right, we'll do the best we can. Okay, we'll hope for a good sale.
Just pop slipping into the seller's box here. It's on, Dorothy. There it is now.
Yep, Brenda has first few cows have just gone through the ring.
Yeah.
So it's a relief that we're yeah.
Are you nervous for the sale as it's ongoing?
No, I'm not. I'm very contented. I have to say I'm very contented.
Right, that concludes our sale. That's it then. Again, I'd wish everyone the very best with their stock and thank you all very much.
And now just outside Carnew Mart, after about, 3.5 hours of a sale,
yep.
Mervyn and Dorothy join me. That's it. Everything's sold, even the silage, Mervyn.
Yes.
What are you thinking?
Very happy.
Are you happy with the prices?
Very, very, very happy with prices. Extremely happy. I hope the stock does as well for the buyers as did for us. I wish them all the best luck with it.
Yeah. What do you do tomorrow morning? Have you thought about
that? Get a good lie in.
No alarm clock set tonight.
Are you surprised that it's come to this?
Well, if you asked me a year ago, I wouldn't have said we would have done. We'd be where we are now. Mm. But I'm very happy where we are.
Yeah.
Very happy. I look forward to the future.
So when you think about your future together now, this is the first real step. Does it feel like that?
Not yet. Probably in a couple of days' time.
Yeah.
When we get to mull everything over and just sit back and relax and think about it, and then it'll be reality then.
Ah, that was is Mervyn Fairbrother having the last word with me at Carnew Mart, where it's fair to say they were absolutely mobbed by well-wishers. And I'm pretty sure they aren't listening to us this morning, because in their house they're not setting alarm clocks anymore. But look, if you're out and about and you see Mervyn and Dorothy over the weekend, you might pass on our good wishes to them both and every happiness in the next chapter of their lives together. And thanks so much for letting us in on Countrywide and something that is kind of very personal and private to them. Now, we asked you to let us know how you're getting on with Storm. Kathleen, a very quick whip around texter from Sligo, says it's not too bad. Maurice in County Clare says her poor garden is battered and the wind is rising now in Westport after a calm night. And of course, they had to add in Mayo for Sam. Well, we'll see what New York have to say about that tomorrow. Now, 2024 has been a year of farmer protests across Europe. At the heart of many of these protests is a feeling of unfairness. Farmers deal with unpredictable weather and prices to produce our food, and yet many of them feel that they cannot make a decent living from doing this. They feel that others along the supply chain are making more money than they are, and with a lot less stress. 5 years ago, the EU asked member states to each establish an office to ensure fair practices in food supply chains and transparency in how they operate. Last December, that office got off the starting blocks and the first Irish agri-food regulator joins me on the line. Good morning, Niamh Lenehan.
Good morning, Brenda. How are you?
I'm not too bad. You're in Meath. How is Storm Kathleen there?
I am indeed. It's probably not as bad as other parts of the country, but it certainly is. The wind is certainly getting up a bit here in the Royal County, Brenda.
Well, stay indoors. Now, your office is barely 4 months old, and I've just said you're just getting off the starting blocks. But I hear that the mere publication of the unfair trading practices legislation has already had an impact with people checking businesses to see if they're compliant. Is that right?
Well, Brenda, first of all, thanks very much for the opportunity to come on this morning to talk about the work of the regulator and its role within the agri-food supply chain, because obviously the food supply chain is so important for all of us. And just to say very briefly, there's two main functions of the regulator, as you've alluded to there. We're making sure that weaker suppliers or actors in the food chain are not subjected to unfair trading practices that have been set down. I'll explain what some of those in a moment. Mm. But also we're charged with improving transparency by publishing information by price and market data. So just to answer your question in terms of the unfair trading practices and to put it in perspective for your listeners, there are a number of unfair trading practices that have been set out, and among them is payment periods. For example, payment for perishable products within 30 days. There's guards against unilateral contract changes. So a buyer is prohibited from suddenly changing the price or volume or quality standards. involved in a contract. Likewise, if a weaker supplier asks for a written contract for their agri-food produce and are not given one, that's a breach of the unfair trading practices. In terms of these unfair trading practices and unfair trading law, it's been in place for a number of years now. So there has been changes in the landscape, including a significant tightening up in terms of payment periods, which, of course, is going to be very beneficial for weaker suppliers in the chain.
Now, am I right in thinking that there's a network of liaison people in the bigger companies now, and those bigger companies have to report annually to your office to say that the legislation, they're complying with the law?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's in terms of the unfair trading law, this is something that's right across the EU. So there are equivalent offices to ourselves across the EU. But also, as you allude to, bigger buyers or more powerful buyers in the food chain are required to liaise with the agri-food regulator. And what that looks like is that they have to have a liaison person, as you've described, to be able to correspond with ourselves. But also they have to submit annual compliance reports. And the first one of those is due in 2025 for the year 2024. So we're busy at the moment ensuring that businesses out there that are involved in agri-food produce and the sale and supply of it are identifying themselves to the regulator so that we can build up relationships with them.
And would you have powers to compel them to give you all that information, particularly when it's sensitive information?
Well, I think there are two things here. So in terms of unfair trading law, there are quite specifically set down in legislation what businesses are required to provide us with. And essentially, it's an overview of how they comply with the unfair trading law, etc. And of course, the agri-food regulator will be on the ground in terms of on-site inspections as well. And I should say that in terms of if there are listeners there in terms of suppliers that feel they may be subjected to an unfair trading practices, they can certainly make contact. I think in terms of the other significant function of the regulator, which is to do with publishing analysis of information about price and market data. So just to explain this to listeners, what we're trying to do is improve transparency along the food chain. So there's a lot of information, as you'd be aware, or relatively more information at a primary producer level. Then we all know how much we pay for food, etc., in the supermarket. So it's those intermediary stages, I suppose, where there is perhaps less information available. And what the regulator is doing is looking at information that's both publicly available and, of course, trying to fill in the gaps then in terms of what's not publicly available through building up a partnership with businesses. And this is a partnership approach, as I've said, and certainly the power that the regulator has is a power to seek information from businesses. And we have been very busy on the ground since January, meeting businesses, listening to them, and indeed building a framework for cooperation through which, sensitive and information can be provided to the regulator for appropriate aggregation for the purpose of publishing.
You know, can I talk to you about low-cost selling? Because whenever we talk to farmers or their representatives, the one thing that really irritates them is low-cost selling in supermarkets. Do you have any control on the discounting there or low-cost selling in general?
Well, what the regulator has been asked to do is essentially improve transparency. So we have been asked to look at, for example, how prices are formed, look at how the value in the food chain is distributed. We cannot prohibit below cost selling. That's not within our remit. However, the information that we're hoping to gather in partnership with businesses may actually, feed into discussions about below cost selling or feed into, other policy decisions, if you like. So we are concerned with increasing understanding across the food chain about how this actually works. And as I said, how the value in the food chain is distributed, because, you know, everybody has to keep the lights on, if you like, from the primary producer through to processor, et cetera, through to the retailer. So all of those links are hugely important in terms of our food supply, obviously. And it's understanding those links and how the value is distributed across it is what we've been asked to look at.
And just on vegetable growers, we know the number of growers in the country has collapsed over the last 40 years. And there's a long-standing practice in the vegetable business of consolidators, I suppose a bit like wholesalers, putting tenders out for the suppliers of vegetables. Could your office have a role in regulating this tendering system?
Well, what we specifically we act as a regulator for the unfair trading practices, which are a set of 16 specific practices, and I've mentioned a few there earlier. I think in terms of obviously one particular sector, we are going to be working across the sectors, and I think specifically for the example that you mentioned there in procurement, there's an interesting function of the regulator in terms of the issuing of guidelines, which would seek to protect supplier interests, so the interests of weaker suppliers in the food chain. And it does seem like, you know, items like procurement, etc., where perhaps there's not a clear understanding on a broader scale about how that might work. So there is an opportunity for the regulator, and indeed in collaboration and conjunction with the sector, to look at perhaps guidelines in that area which would improve transparency.
And Eve, just very briefly, if the agri-food regulator is a success, what does success look for you in 5 years' time?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think it obviously a respected organisation with strong foundations. Also in terms of, you know, we're understood to be an organisation that's listening to the needs and circumstances of the supply chain in general. But also that we have built up expertise, and, you know, one of the key activities at the moment is obviously establishing our office and recruiting the skills and everything that we need. But also that information or further information on the food supply chain is out there, and that it's evidence-based and accessible on a general level.
Well, Niamh, thank you so much for talking to us and introducing us to your work in the Agri-Food Regulator. And you know what? We'd love, when it's up and running a little bit, you come back in to studio to Countrywide and tell us your progress to date. We'd love to hear that. Thank you very much. That's Niamh Lenehan, Ireland's first Agri-Food Regulator.
Email countrywide at rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
And you're very welcome back, and I hope wherever you are this morning, you are safely out of the way of Storm Kathleen. No unnecessary journeys. As the saying goes, text 51551. Our email is countrywide at rte.ie. Now, down in Vicarstown in County Leash, the Scully family are busy on Merryhill Farm, where, amongst other things, they grow and mill their own certified gluten-free organic oats. Kevin, Jenny and their four daughters have a great story to tell about being brave and enterprising and creating a really successful farm business with their oats and flour, sold under the Merry Mill brand. But even their merry outlook can't disguise the impact that the past year of rain and more rain has had on their farm. Hannah Quinn Mulligan went down to visit Merryhill Farm, where she met Kevin in the cowshed, where their story really began.
Good morning, Hannah, and welcome to the Merryhill Farm. So we're down here in the cattle shed, and this is where the whole story began. I was down here one morning about 7 years ago and had my youngest daughter here with me at the time. I was feeding oats to the cattle. She picked up a handful, put them in her mouth and said, "Daddy, can we eat these?"
Really?
And so from there, I went, done research, and we built a mill here on the farm, and now we're Ireland's only certified organic gluten-free oat mill here in Vicarstown, County Laois.
I can hear some music there in the background. The cows seem to be being serenaded, some very soft tunes there.
Yeah, these cattle here, they're on a very specific diet. So they're on hay and oats from the Murray Mill, and then I have them on classical music as well. I read back some years ago that classical music was really good for relaxing animals and people, so it didn't cost a lot. So I put a radio in the cattle shed on Lyric FM, playing 24/7, and actually it really has worked.
And people that meet you, you know, you're quite a happy sort of person, but you were part-time farming before you went full-time into the selling oats directly. What was it like being a part-time farmer?
Yeah, as a part-time farmer, I always felt for myself as a little bit of a disappointment that I couldn't make a living off my own land. And I was working in concrete. I was quite allergic to it, and it was really annoying me. Like, I was a farmer with headlights, as they call it. I was coming home in the evening with the headlights to feed the cattle. And I was always there, why can't I make a living off my land? So I was fighting with that in my head forever. So I was always looking for something. And I did. I had another little business before the mill. I had a mobile crush brain idea that I came up with, brought to market. It failed. And then we found the Murray Mill and the porridge, and success at some level since then.
And I should say as well, you mentioned one of your daughters there earlier who's the inspiration. She grabbed a handful of oats and shoved it into her mouth. But your daughters have been really integral to the whole thing. And there's one of them over here who's doing the social media. She seems a little bit shy, but she might tell us, Si, come on over a second, because your dad says that you've been pivotal to the whole thing as well.
I studied marketing in college, and Dad started the business the year before I started, and I was an integral part of building the branding, designing the website.
Did she get paid as an integral part as well?
Well, good food. Proper farm payment, as like in Ireland forever, child labour was used in the farming. It was the backbone, actually, of Irish farming, was child labour. And like, I was blessed with four daughters, and like with all kids, they're not sure what they want to be. But then they're lucky to have someone like me, because I knew we'd need something
lucky
in Mar.
You're very lucky.
In direction, so.
It took a few years, but he paid me in the end.
So I have one daughter, Si, she went done marketing, and then I have Aoife, my second daughter. She's doing interactive design, which could come very useful for packaging and brand design. And then my third daughter, she's doing human health. And then my last girl, I'm just thinking Gortin is a lovely spot, or Kildalton. We're not sure, but I was just saying to her, lovely
cottages.
Like, I couldn't have done this without a family. If I was a single man of my own, this wouldn't have been possible, because I'm using Stone Age technology to mill. The mill's a completely old style, but then we're using Space Age and the computer technology, and my kids are completely computer literate. I'm computer illiterate.
The oats being gluten-free, is that important for some customers?
There was a bit of sitting around the table. Do you think that tastes good? Do you think that tastes good? Not known. After spending an absolute fortune and the mill not even working, we're only getting about 4 bags a day out of a mill that cost over 100 grand. And we're going, holy Lord, what have we done here? And then we've got lucky. We got a lot of luck along the way. And then with the diagnosis now of celiac and gluten intolerance, that technology has come on in leaps and bounds. So now there's a huge amount of people who are gluten intolerant. So demand has really grown with our products. So yeah, been good.
That's brilliant. We might leave the cattle to their soothing music for a while, because there's something else that's going on, and that is, of course, the weather that's impacting all farmers, but it's impacting tillage farmers like you in particular. So we'll walk out to the fields and you can tell us what I should see versus what I am seeing.
Yeah.
It's actually started raining as we're walking out. Is that the main problem, the rain?
Oh, the rain is a huge issue at the moment. Like, even I come out every day now and I just look up and say, I'm only looking, please, just give us a second. I'm only coming out for a look, because it's relentless. Like, it's been raining now, like, with troubles in the harvest back end of last year. I left 35 acres unharvested last year due to bad weather. That crop is still sitting there. And I was looking around thinking, up to Christmas, I was as well on. But now the spring is after running really wet, and I've still not in the ground.
So it's a real challenge for my operation, because getting in oats is really important for milling to get a good grain quality, especially in organic. Like, you want to have oats in the ground in March, early March if possible, and that's not going to happen this year. Like, I'm looking, I'd say, another 2 weeks before there's going to be any planting done here. The whole tillage sector, it's a real huge issue. Running over from last year, we're running into a second bad year in a row now, because a lot of the winter crop planted is waterlogged as well with bad crop establishment. So a lot of people that did get in winter crop, we got no winter crop sowed last year. It was the first time ever I had no winter crop in.
The Department of Agriculture will say, though, that they've brought out a variety of supports to help tillage farmers.
It was a scheme that looked good for a second, and then the reality of it, like, we applied for it, and then last year we were late sown, so I sowed peas with my oats, and the peas was specifically to attract nitrogen to the ground to improve the quality of the oats. Because I'd done that, then I was eligible for the unharvested crop scheme. Like, crazy. And then they were saying it's for cereal. We couldn't be any more cereal here. We produce all the oats in this farm into a porridge, into a bag, straight to consumer. And it's sometimes it's the little things that really drive you. You suck up some of the bad stuff. It's the little things. So I got a letter in the post to say, because I applied for the unharvested crop scheme, I'm now ineligible for the straw and corporation scheme.
In terms of the difference all of this is going to make to your bottom line at the end of the year between not getting into schemes and between late crops as well being sown, is it going to be a real challenge?
Oh, it's a real challenge for what I do, because the problem in my operation is I am the only producer of certified organic gluten-free oats. So I can't go and buy products for my mill. So if I run out of stock, I'm out of business. And there's other people as well. I have friends who are in wheat milling and they have the very same problem. They're gone late now for sowing milling wheat, and they're too going to run out of stock. So there's a massive challenge, and there's a massive loss. You can see across the tillage sector, the loss of land, like, I think we could have lost 70, 80,000 acres last year, and that's year on year. So the tillage is just shrinking at a rapid pace, and it'd be hard to revive it when it's gone.
Well, that's Kevin Scully speaking to Hannah Quinn Mulligan at Maryhill Farm there in Leash. And do you know what? I'd love a bowl of porridge now. It sounds actually delicious. But we've had a text in saying we're enjoying our Merry Mill porridge for breakfast. A wonderful family-run company. Wish them all the best. To the Scully family, that's from the Lynch family in Dundrum. Enjoy your porridge, Lynches. Lots in on the weather around the country. Power is out in God's North Country. Can't go milking. That's Cork and North Cork. And Declan from Castletown Bear has said, the wind is not as bad as was expecting. However, the rain is desperate. A lot of surface flooding. Spare a thought for fishermen. Also, the weather has made making a living near impossible, as with we farmers, we depend on good weather to go to work. That's from Declan. And good morning from Leanna, County Galway, where the wind, rain and gusts have been crazy since Thursday night. Please ask people with wheelie bins at their gates to bring them in, as the roads and ditches are littered with them already. And that's from Robert in Leanann. Very good tip, Robert. We've just said it. You've heard what Robert said. Bring your wheelie bins in. And I just want to say, particularly listen to Kevin there, you know, it's such a difficult time for farmers at the moment. And many farmers have been feeling quite alone. So given all the challenges just now, pick up the phone for a chat. Cook a good dinner for yourself and your family. Maybe arrange to meet a pal for tomorrow. Do something. Find a small way to give yourself a break from the worry.
This ain't Texas. Oh. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So pocket Lexus.
It's trending and streaming on social media. That's Texas Hold'em from Beyoncé's new album, Cowboy Carter. And Beyoncé is now hailed as the new queen of country.
It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a come take it to the floor now.
And the newspapers have said, not since Nathan Carter whipped up a frenzy with his wagon wheel hit in 2012 has a song made a massive impact on the local scene like Beyoncé's Texas Hold'em. So when I caught up with him earlier, I began by asking Nathan this question. Did you ever think that you and Beyoncé would be mentioned in the same sentence?
In the same sentence, definitely not, no.
This album here, with all its tracks, all the hype, I presume you've listened, Nathan. What do you think?
Yes, right. Nathan Carter has listened to Cowboy Carter. I've got to be totally honest and say it wouldn't be my cup of tea. But I think whatever Beyonce touches turns to gold, and it can only be a good thing for the genre. It's getting people talking about country anyway, that's for sure. Like it did whenever Taylor Swift first came on the scene. Yeah, I mean, in one way, it's as far away removed from Philomena Begley or Billy Joe Spears as anything is, but is getting people talking about the genre, which is only a good thing.
Now, Dolly Parton obviously was very interested in Beyonce covering Jolene. That song was written, it was like the perfect country song. It has, you know, hope and disappointment and longing and fear. Mm. Do you think Beyonce tampering with the lyrics and adding in is not a good thing?
And dropping F-bombs and B-bombs all over the place.
Not in that song.
Yeah, not in that one, but in some of the other tracks on the album, yeah. For me, Dolly's version of Jolene, as she wrote it, is perfect in every way. I don't know why you would change it, to be honest, but I can understand why Dolly would obviously be happy with Beyonce doing whatever she wants to it, because it's great business-wise, clearly, and is drawing attention to Dolly's back catalogue now as well.
Now, you were talking about F-bombs there, and do you think that has no place in country music?
For me, yeah, the legitimacy of the whole thing is, I don't know if you can call it country at all. It's more rap influenced and pop driven. But obviously there's a banjo in the background. So, but you know, there's that many styles of country music now.
Yeah.
Like if you go to listen to the top 10 in Nashville, which I don't really do, to be honest with you, because I love the older stuff. But the whole genre has shifted, which now makes Beyonce's thing sound more country. Country means many things to many people now. It's not Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard. It's now rappers and, all different types of mixed genres together.
I'm worried, Nathan. I'm worried about you. I'm worried.
For the state of country music.
I'm worried, Nathan. I'm worried you're starting to sound a little bit fuddy-duddy. Would you accept that?
I'm very old, aren't I? Very old-fashioned.
Yeah.
It's very hard to move with the times, but I totally get it. I do get it. And I think everybody to their own. I prefer Dolly and I prefer Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash to the newer crop of country singers that are out there at the minute. But that's just me.
She's from Texas originally. Like Beyonce's from Texas, and country music is the music of that area. And
totally, yeah.
Do you not think it's wonderful that like an accomplished black female artist is offering her take on country music and bringing it to a global audience?
I really do, yeah. I mean, I think that's only a good thing. I mean, I remember touring with Charlie Pride. We'd done a cruise together and stuff, and he did chat when he was alive about the struggles he had as a black man in country music. It was horrific for him, and the record company would never post a picture of him. They just had a general cover for an album and stuff like that. They wouldn't put his face because he was black on the album. So, I mean, to think from that 40 years ago to now, Beyonce being number one in the country charts as a black woman, the first ever black woman, I think you said there, was it?
Yeah.
Is unbelievable and shows how far we've all come, you know what I mean, in the music industry. And she's allowed to do that. And as you say, she's entitled to do whatever she wants country-wise because she is from Texas, the capital of country music, really.
Will you be adding any of her songs to your set list when you're back performing again?
I'll have to get practicing my rap skills if I'm to add any of the songs.
Nathan, you can do anything.
I'll have a go. I'll have to have a good listen to the album now. I've only listened to it once, and that was driving to a gig the other day. And I did enjoy some of it, and there was bits of it that I wasn't too sure on, but it can only be good for the genre and brings a whole new, hopefully, generation to listen to that style of music.
I believe you. I believe you do have a problem with certain areas of it, the change in the lyrics and the F-bombs around it. Am I correct?
Yes, yeah. I don't know if there's any need for that in the world of country music. But listen, as I say, that's just my opinion. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are absolutely loving hearing the F-bombs throughout.
Tell me, what are you up to yourself at the moment, Nathan? When are we going to see you? What's the gossip? What's the news?
Well, we've just been on tour in the UK for the last 2 months. We had our most successful tour to date, which was really, really good. And then we're back in Ireland from this week on. We're in Enniskillen doing a charity gig for our local school called Willowbridge, where I live in Fermanagh, obviously. So,
yeah.
And then we're in Kilkenny. We've got a big gig in the Bord Gáis on the 27th of June. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's the last few tickets are on sale for that gig in Dublin.
It'll be gone, especially if you tell them you're going to do a Beyoncé cover.
If I do my rap segment in the middle of the show.
Would your nan, your lovely nan, like this album?
I haven't asked her now, but I can imagine not. I wouldn't have thought so. But who knows? You know,
yeah.
that latest single, Texas Hold'em, if there's a bit of line dancing involved, my nan will be up dancing away. So she could love it.
And will you play it in the car as you're driving along? Will it be on your Spotify favourite list?
I am going to listen to it a few more times, actually, yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, when you listen to an album for once, you know, one time only, and you get an impression, and then you mightn't like it that much, and then you listen to it more and more and you start loving it. Mm. So who knows? If we had this conversation in a week's time, I might be telling you I absolutely love it. But on my initial listen, I was quite surprised at how far removed away from country it was.
Well, from Nathan Carter to Cowboy Carter, thank you for your time. Thank you for talking to us on Countrywide. And we might as well play Beyoncé's version of Jolene. Thanks, Nathan.
Take care, Brenda. Big hello to all the listeners. Have a great one.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm warning you, don't come for my man. We've been deep in love for 20 years. I raised that man, I raised his kids. I know my man better than he knows himself.
And that's our lot for this week. And thanks very much to Nathan and all our guests on this morning's Countrywide. Amadine Pasta-Devine was our broadcast assistant. Mark Dwyer was on sound. Eileen Heron produced. Philip will be back with you next Saturday at the same time. Until then, thank you for listening and stay safe on this stormy Saturday. And stay tuned for Sinead Mooney on Playback.